And giving me a chance to talk about this subject. So this is a condensed matter physicist attempt to understand the nature of ADS-CFT. So as Tadashi and Hong already reviewed, so this conjecture says that D-dimensional quantum field theory is equal to gravitational theory in one higher dimensional space and time. And the reason why this conjecture is so interesting is that it relates to very different theory. Therefore, one can learn about one side from very different perspectives. So from condensed matter point of view, we can try to capture some strongly coupled quantum fluctuation using some gravitational language. On the other hand, one can try to learn about gravity from inside of quantum field theory that we are familiar with. So the dictionary goes as the following. So suppose I have a D-dimensional space and time where my field theory is defined, and my partition function or generating function is given by function integrations of D-dimensional field in the presence of some general source. And then in this duality, this source is kind of promoted to dynamical field in this one higher dimensional space and time. And the same generating function is reproduced by quantum theory of this dynamical variable in one higher dimensional space, provided that this dynamical variable satisfies some boundary condition at the boundary. So this is the bulk space and time, and the boundary of the bulk space and time coincide with the space-time where the field theory is defined. And what's behind this correspondence? So originally the conjecture has been made from the string theory context, but people have more general understanding that this duality is due to this inversion symmetry. So the idea is that the radial direction in this bulk space and time should be viewed as the length scale of your field theory, and the bulk variables. So in general, I have D-dimensional coupling function, and then this D-dimensional coupling function now change as a function of a scale, and that's one additional dimension. And the way the bulk variable evolve along the radial direction should be viewed as the RZ flow. And there have been many previous works that make this connection, try to make this connection more precise. However, there's some this connection between RG and GR has been incomplete for the following reason. First of all, in RG, this coupling constant are not dynamical in the sense that they obey this first order beta function. So if we interpret this RG scale as some kind of time, it's like a system where kinetic energy is completely quenched. So there's no momentum like object. Whereas in GR, this bulk theory in general has two derivative terms in the action, and therefore equation of motion is a second order differential equation, so you need to specify both coordinate and momentum. And on the other hand, more seriously, in RG, the coupling functions or coupling constants are classical in the sense that if you specify your initial condition, then that uniquely determines the RG trajectory without any uncertainty. On the other hand, in GR, this is supposed to be quantum gravity, and these coupling functions have, in general, quantum fluctuations. So to make this connection more precise, the claim is that we have to promote our RG to quantum RG. And then this equality become precise. So let me try to explain what's quantum RG. So although this concept is general, let me try to explain in the simplest context, which is a matrix model. So although in condensed matter physics, we don't have many examples of matrix model, but there are some indication that the Fermi surface is described by some matrix model. But let's not go into that. Suppose I have some...
whether a spin system can be formulated as a matrix model with a small matrix, it has kind of like a tensor network approach in the matrix model, can we view that way as a general method we can describe anything?
You mean...
to write with a quantum spin system as a matrix model.
Where this matrix is the quantum dimension?
The matrix in the... spin degree freedom.
Okay. I think you need to have some different representation, like instead of fundamental representation of spin, if you have different representation, then maybe it's possible. Yeah. Yeah. For example, if you don't have, if spin order parameter is not collinear or coplanar, okay, then you need to introduce some matrix order parameter. Yeah. So suppose I have some n by n matrix fields, and then suppose my Lagrangian is written in terms of what is called single trace operator. So this O is an operator that is made of one trace of this matrix space. And this J is a space-time dependent source for this single trace operator. Yeah, it's straightforward to generalize to the case where there are multi-trace operator, but let's keep this for simplicity. Now let's, and then suppose I coarse grain the system. I lower my UV cutoff by some small factor and integrate out the high energy modes. And then there will be some quantum correction. And then quantum correction includes three important pieces. First of all, there will be, so all quantum correction is proportional to dz in the small dz limit. And the first important piece is what is called Casimir energy. You integrate out some high energy mode in the presence of source, then you generate shift in the ground state energy. So that's the Casimir energy that depends on the source. And then second thing, you have a quantum correction to the existing single trace operator. So this is nothing but the beta function for the single trace operator. And another thing is that even though you start from a theory that has only single trace operator, you inevitably generate double trace operators. And this and higher trace operators are suppressed by higher powers of dz. And in conventional RG, you keep going. You repeat this step, and then you have a double trace operator, and then in the next step, you generate triple trace operator, and then you generate all multi-trace operators. So suppose this is the space of theory, and this is, say, the theory where only single trace operators are turned on, and this axis represents multi-trace operator. And then even though you start from a point within this subspace, you generically flow out of this plane, and in general, your IR fixed point exists away from this plane. And of course, this RG flow is deterministic, as I explained. And this is conceptually very simple. However, this is in general intractable for strongly coupled theory because you have to keep, in general, infinite number of operators, or single trace, but also all multi-trace operators. And quantum RG is an alternative way of organizing RG, in a sense, more economical way. So it goes as this. Suppose we start from, say, single trace theory, and as we lower our energy scale, my theory moves out of this plane. Then what I can do is to project my theory down to theory where only single trace operator, but if you just throw away multi-trace operator, then I'm changing my theory. In order to keep the same theory, you have to allow uncertainty in the source of the single trace operator. So the mathematical statement is that theory, which has multi-trace operator, is exactly the same as a theory which has only single trace operator, provided that you allow the source for the single trace operator has some distribution, has some fluctuations. So mathematically, it can be implemented in the following way. So this is, say, some low energy effective action that I just have. So I have Casimir energy and single trace operator. So this was the original source, and this is the quantum correction. And then this is the double trace operator that has been generated at this first step of RG. And now this theory can be mapped into the following theory, where I turned on, I introduced a pair of auxiliary fields for every single trace operator n. And then if you look at this new theory, so the Casimir energy is same, but here if you look at this section, it's linear in J1. It's linear in this auxiliary field. That means this is a Lagrangian multiplier basically. And if you integrate out this Lagrangian multiplier, you have constraint says that say P is minus O. And then if you integrate out P, now then in these places, every P get replaced by O. Then you exactly reproduce the same thing. What we have done is that then the nice thing about this formalism is that now in terms of your original field, you have only single trace operator. So you don't have a multi-trace operator. The price we have to pay is that the source for the single trace operator is not constant, it's dynamical variable. Suppose you didn't have double trace operator, right? Then this action is linear in P again. So P is also Lagrangian multiplier. Then if you integrate dot P, then small j is just given by original j times plus quantum correction. So that will be the deterministic algebra flow if there was no double trace operator.
So you could do it in classical statistical mechanics also.
Yeah, right, yeah. Right.
There, we won't call it as quantum mechanics.
Right. Yeah. This is a general statement about generality. But because of double trace operator, if you integrate out P, then you give some Gaussian distribution for small j. Therefore, in that sense, there's a non-trivial quantum fluctuation for the source of the single trace operator. And then you can do this repeatedly. In other words, so this is my UV theory. And then in the first step of RG, my theory moves out of the plane. Then I project down to the single trace operator by introducing this auxiliary field, dynamical source, and some conjugate field. And then at each point, you know, you coarse grain again. And then your theory moves out of the plane again. And then you again project down to the space of single trace operator by introducing second set of dynamical source and then conjugate field and so on. So this is the picture. Then what happens is that you don't have to worry about multi-trace operator. Everything is formulated purely in terms of single trace operator. But the price is that your generating function is given by sum of all RG paths. So this is what I mean by quantum RG. And then the weight for each path is determined by some D plus one dimensional dynamical action for this dynamical source and the conjugate field. Why is it D plus one dimensional action? Because, so in general, this for D dimensional field theory, the coupling function is a D dimensional. But I introduced this dynamical coupling function at every step of RG. So this step of RG become extra dimension when I make the RG step very small. Okay, and then this D plus one dimensional action can be explicitly computed. To know the D plus one dimensional action, you need to know three things about field theory. First of all, you need to know the Casimir energy. In other words, you need to know how the ground state energy shift in the presence of general source. So in general, in conventional algebra, we don't pay much attention to the Casimir energy, it's just the ground state energy. However, here is important because the sources are dynamical. You know, here these sources are fluctuating, and then if I integrate out high energy mode in the presence of fluctuating source, it provides some potential energy for the fluctuating source. So it gives a dynamical dynamical action for the source.
But is that the original field only coupled to the Jn?
Original field couples to Jn. You mean?
I didn't mean step of this, but the original field only coupled one to the Jn step.
Yeah, the initial step is fixed by microscopic coupling. The initial condition is fixed. And then the second thing is that you need to know the beta function for the single trace operator. That gives the term that is linear in this P. And finally, you need to know the beta function for the double trace operator. But these informations, only thing that you need to know is this information in the subspace of single trace operator. You need to know the beta function in the subspace of single trace operator, how double trace operators are generated, and what is the Schwarzschild energy. And then, you know, if this Z is the RG scale, and then, you know, this, if we interpret this Z as some kind of time, then this dynamical source and this P become conjugate, canonically conjugate to each other.
So this step you only integrate away some of the original fields. You never integrate away some of the J and P.
So if you initially introduce some multi-trace operator in the initial theory,
I mean, at each step of this quantum machine, you integrate away shell of the original fields, and that's it.
Shell of original theory? You mean capital
shell? The momentum shell of the original fields of your theory.
Oh, yeah. At each step, you only integrate some high energy mode within the shell.
So these fields, P and J, would have a cutoff, which depends on.
No, this J, so. So in this process, I'm integrating out, this is the momentum cutoff for the original matrix field, right? But this J and P, the cutoff of JP and is not this.
Yeah.
You also rescale lengths at each step, the cutoff for
that. Right.
Yeah. Which means that the J scale is scaled.
Okay, so.
So why do you consider the extra dimension as time like? Isn't it usually space like?
No, it's not real time. It's space like. But if I just interpret this as some kind of time, I'm just making point that it's like some Hamiltonian evolution, where this J and P are conjugate to each other. So whether the extra dimension is space like or time like depends on the sign of this beta function.
Okay. Isn't this non unitary?
Okay, I will go back to that. Okay, so this is the point. So in general, the RG flow is irreversible, right? So so that means in general, we expect the bulk action to break the inversion symmetry along the radial direction, right? Because the direction going into IR will be different. Evolution going into IR will be different from the evolution going to UV. But strangely, most known holographic duals have inversion symmetry. And then, of course, in this bulk space and time, there is a boundary. There's always, you start from a theory which has UV cutoff. And this UV boundary explicitly breaks the inversion symmetry. So therefore, you can still have irreversible RG flow starting from the action that respect this inversion symmetry along the radial direction.
But that's the ABS curvature break inversion symmetry?
No, yeah. So that's the property of solution, but I'm asking whether the action breaks the inversion symmetry or not. So naively, you expect that the bulk action should break the inversion symmetry, but maybe the bulk action preserve inversion symmetry. But in general, there is a this term that is odd under this invariant symmetry. For example, here J is like coordinate is even, but P is like momentum, that's odd. So this first, second, and fourth term are invariant symmetry. But this third term genetically breaks the invariant symmetry. That makes sense because if there's a scaling dimension, that scaling dimension makes the field to either grow or decay along one direction. So if there's a beta function, that breaks the invariant symmetry. However, if this beta function satisfies some condition, then actually you can remove this term by shifting the momentum. And that condition is actually the gradient flow condition. In other words, if this beta function for the single trace operator is generated by gradient of some C function with respect to this metric set by the beta function of double trace operator, if this condition is set, if there exists a C function of that satisfies this condition, then you can show that you can shift your momentum and to remove this term from the bulk. And of course, there are boundary terms that are created. So this inversion symmetry breaking term can be traded with a boundary term and some mass term that is proportional, mass for the J that is proportional to the scaling dimension. Okay. So of course, we don't know whether all field theory satisfy this condition or not. But the claim is that this condition, the gradient flow nature, is equivalent to the statement that holographic action is inversion respect to this symmetry along the radial direction. So it relates to two different properties. And many people believe that indeed that there's a great or algae flow can be viewed as a gradient flow.
No, that's not true. Even in 1 plus 1 dimension.
You mean this limit cycle?
No, not to be fair. Even in 1 plus 1 dimension, it's known that algae is not gradient flow, right?
But I think there are some, if you choose some RG scheme, there's a prescription dependent in general.
The fixed point, you can always do it, but away from the fixed point.
No, away from the, in 1 plus 1D, this is Zamolodchikov's metric, right?
But actually Zamolodchikov does not tell you the gradient.
Yeah, but if this is the case, then I don't know whether, I think there's no counterexample. There are.
I think people have written papers about that.
But this the counterexample is this limit cycle.
No, not even limit cycle. It's even ordinary example. Anyway, I think people.
Yeah, have. Yeah. I don't know whether this is generally true or not. But the statement is that if this is the case, then this holographic action should respect the scale, this inversion symmetry.
You know, somebody computed this beta and G for some theory, like Nikolov square and
You mean these quantities? No, I hope to be able to do that, but I. Yeah, I think another comment to that is that in general, you don't have to, this doesn't have to be a symmetric tensor. And if you allow this to be, have an anti-symmetric component, then this can incorporate even the limit cycle case, it seems that. Okay, so what is the nature of this D plus one dimensional holographic action? So in general, so this can be done for any matrix field theory, and in general, the bulk action is very strongly coupled. That strongly coupled theory for many fields, but this becomes simpler in two limit, as Hong mentioned. In the large end limit, there's an n square factor in front of this action, so that these fluctuations are suppressed. So it becomes classical, but large n is not enough in general because you still have infinitely many fields in general. So, but if there are some only small set of operator which has small scaling dimension, and if all other operators have very large scaling dimension, and as I mentioned, you can show that mass of the fields is proportional to the scaling dimension in the bulk. Therefore, in that case, you can truncate or integrate out those heavy modes in the bulk And then your borrow correction is still local for this finite number of fields, and that then this description become more useful.
So is it automatic that if you have a constant current, it will correspond to the gauge field?
Yeah, you can show that. Yeah.
So if you do this for the ON model, you will get an eigenspin theory.
Yeah. I haven't tried the ON model, but if you have some simple UN, for example, U1, you can explicitly show that you should have gauge symmetry, gauge field in the block. I think it can be done to any global symmetry. And the simplistic example that you can study is, of course, when there's only one operator which has small scaling dimension. And then in general, we have, suppose we have translational invariance in space and time, so that energy momentum tensor is a conserved quantity. Then this, because of that, the scaling dimension of energy momentum tensor is protected. And suppose I have some field theory where energy momentum tensor is the only operator which has finite scaling dimension, and all other operators have a very large scaling dimension. And in that limit, following this step, you can explicitly show that D plus one dimensional Einstein gravity emerge up to second derivative order. So let me just briefly mention.
So you mean the full nonlinear action?
Yeah, full nonlinear action.
So something you mean that when you say the Einstein gravity emerge, you mean all higher derivative terms is controlled by some small parameter?
Right, that's the UV cutoff. Of course, if you have some other fields, some other light fields in the bulk, then it's controlled not by UV cutoff, but the mass of those light fields. But here I'm assuming that all other operators have infinitely large scaling dimension. Then derivative expansion is just controlled by UV cutoff of your
state. So you can show that if you include other operators, then what surprise the higher derivative terms is the dimension of those operators.
That's right, in general. Because if you integrate out those modes in the bulk, you will in general introduce some non-locality within the scale.
On the ON model, the ON interacting ON model doesn't have higher spin conserved current, it only has a flavor current, vector current that's conserved. So and he's taking the vector margin limit, and the higher spin conservation is on the vector margin limit. So I don't think that will generally happen. So it's only the free theory that has a higher spin conserved current.
I guess to the leading order in 1 over n.
But that's 1 over vector n.
Yeah.
Which is not what you're doing.
Right, but
so
here
the model is not told that G flow generates only double.
All these arguments are from. You could take a different OM model where it's an NY matrix rather than a vector OM model.
But I mean.
But he can do it for NY model.
What would
no, but that's not what he's doing.
This is matrix model.
But what would prevent? I mean, all that he's using is that he generates double trace operators.
Yeah, I don't know what that means for the
ON
vector.
Oh,
sorry, go on.
Yeah.
Some sequence. Einstein got his action using covariance and scalars.
Right.
So it's in deep here.
Yeah, there's a notion. Yeah, there's a notion of general covariance, like
yeah.
How we explained.
If I call
my
derivatives by single
vector. Okay. So how do we get gradient? So suppose I have a theory which has no other operator except for the energy momentum tensor with finite scaling dimension. That means if I deform the theory by some other perturbation, then this perturbation will instantly die out. So my theory, and then only deformation that survives is the deformation of the background matrix, because that's the only only operator, energy momentum tensor is the only operator that has finite scaling dimension. That means my theory is completely specified by this background metric. So this is a d-dimensional background metric, and I have a field theory in the defined on curve space and time. Okay? And suppose my field theory is regularized that respect d-dimensional diffeomorphism invariance, such as Pauli-Villar regularization, etc. Okay. And then suppose we cool screen the system, and then we lower the energy scale, and then there are quantum corrections are generated. And then, as I mentioned, there are three important pieces in the quantum correction. First of all, you integrate out some high energy modes in the presence of this curved background, and then you generate dynamical action for this metric. Okay, and that was noted by Sarov in many years ago. The leading order term is the cosmological constant, and then the second term is the Ricci scalar, and then there are of course high order terms, square of the Ricci scalar, and then more derivatives of the Ricci scalar. But this is the only term that is allowed by D-dimensional diffeomorphism up to second order in derivative. And of course, you under RG you coarse grain and you rescale your space and time. And that means your metric has to change. And that's the change of the metric can be viewed as the correction to the energy momentum tensor. And this is the warping factor, how fast I rescale my space and time. And then most importantly, even though you start from single trace operator, you generate double trace operator of the energy momentum tensor. And then in general, you can have double trace operator of energy momentum tensor or some other operator. But in the large and limit, all those operators have very large scaling limit.
If you further assume that there's gradient flow, can you relate that C function to the cosmological?
Yes. Yeah. Actually, C function, the cosmological constant is given by that C function. Not equal, but there's an explicit relation.
I think what suppressed is the higher blue terms at this stage.
The UV cutoff of field theory.
And the C1D does not depend on UV cutoff.
C1D has a dimension. So this is A to the minus D, where A is the short distance cutoff. Mm-hmm. And this is A to the minus D plus 2.
Yeah, so that's the only scale.
Yeah, that's the only scale. Yeah, that's the only scale. And of course, you can have some derivative of the energy momentum tensor. It is also suppressed by the UV cutoff. So this is the only term that is leading order. And then here there is a related to the Bhaskaran's question, where is the diffeomorphism invariance? And actually, diffeomorphism invariance is related to the freedom to choose different RG prescription. And in particular, this n of x is space-time dependent speed of RG. In other words, in usual RG, you coarse grain your system uniformly. In other words, you choose the uniform speed at all points in space and time. However, you can choose to make your speed of RG to be space time dependent. You can lower your UV cutoff. Suppose your theory is UV regularized by some higher derivative term, right? And then you can lower your UV cutoff, in a space time dependent way. Okay, and this speed of RG is what enters here. This is the and this is in general. Space-dependent quantity, and then there's another gauge freedom. In other words, as you integrate out high energy modes in real space, for example, we usually allocate the same coordinate for the low energy field as the coordinate of the high energy field. But you don't have to do that, and you can assign different coordinate for the low energy field as compared to the coordinate of the high energy field. And this is what is called the shift of your, this kind of, there's a freedom to assign coordinate for the low energy field. And then, as I explained before, so this provides kind of potential energy for the metric at each step of RG. And this double trace operator become the kinetic energy for the momentum. And then there is this warping term, but using the same technique, that you can trade this with some boundary term and some mass term. But here, mass term is the cosmological constant. So mass term is proportional to the square of the beta function. So that's the cosmological constant is proportional to this guy, the warping factor. And then you can show that to the two, up to two derivative term, your bulk action takes this form. So this is the now d plus. So this is mu nu runs over d dimensional coordinate because this is the metric for the original d dimensional space and time. But it depends on d dimensional coordinate and the scale because I introduced this fluctuating metric at each step of RG. And this is like a canonical conjugate momentum to this background metric. And this n is the RG speed, the space-time dependent speed of RG. And this n mu is the shift that I introduced to shift the coordinate of the low energy field. And then you can show that this Hamiltonian is made of this cosmological constant and then this d-dimensional Ricci scalar and this quadratic term for this conjugate momentum. So this is, and actually you can show that everything is fixed except for one parameter, which is the relative quantity, relative magnitude between this term and this term. So this parameter is not fixed by d-dimensional deformation invariance. However, there's only particular combination that is consistent with the condition that this H and H mu form what is called first class algebra. So let me explain what it is. So I have a generating function, but this n, so these are the speed of RG and the shift. And my generating function should not depend on this parameter because this is pure gauge choice. That different choice of speed of RG and different speed of shift just means different RG prescriptions. So my generating function is independent of this gauge parameter. That means this H and H mu that I wrote before should be constraints. So they vanish on shell. Moreover, this condition, the fact that this vanishes, are satisfied at every coordinate in Z, because I can vary my gauge this gauge choice at different coordinate independently. That means the boson bracket between this constraint should vanish on shell. So that means this so this is the statement that these constraints are first class constraints. And this first class constraint condition fixes the relative magnitude between the two. And then from this, if you integrate out this canonical momentum, then you reproduce the cosmological constant and then the d plus one dimensional Ricci scalar and then higher derivative that involve at least three or more derivatives.
Sorry, something. If I just close my eye to the integration, you can fix that constant.
Hmm?
If I just suppose you should be able to just derive even that constant just by a pure half integral integration, right?
Which constant? The C naught?
No, you mean.
You mean this one?
Constant.
Oh, yeah. This one. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they should be.
Do you have to do something extra, or should this just?
I think it should.
My eye to pass in the code, that should come out.
I think it should come out. Yeah, mm-hmm. It should come out.
But somehow now you have to impose something additional to see.
No, it's not imposed. It's the nature. It's the first class constraint nature. It's just a statement that this n and mu are just gauge choice.
Yeah, sure.
Sounds like
yeah.
Your statement. It's some property of the OPE of the
that's right. Right. That's right.
Yeah, but
it was not doing natural, I think, bigger than natural theory, right?
I'm just say, asking if you just do parsing the Go, you say, I was just confused by your earlier statement that when you that constant is not fixed by your parser.
Oh, but it's not fixed by the dimensional deformation in there.
Okay, but.
So I use
function of TT.
It's a nice hypothetical theory that has some huge gap. It's not like he has like man, not something like that. So he needs to use some more powerful argument.
Yeah, so for example, the fact that only D dimensional Ricci scalar appear here is based on the D dimensional deformation, right? But that alone does not fix this argument, this coefficient.
Sure, if you just do your pass integral, do you find the right option?
I don't have to. That's the point. That's the point. I don't have to. This has to be the right number in order to be. Right. So
it's
then you. Then you should do for some concrete field theory, like any equal force for young list.
Even assuming you have a matrix.
Right. So the bottom line is that quantum RG provides a general and microscopic understanding of what ADS-CFT correspondence is. And this is an alternative way of organizing RG, which is tractable in some large and strongly coupled field theories. And then I made the point that if the RG flow is gradient flow, then for such a theory, the holographic dual respect the inversion symmetry along the radial direction. And then if your field theory has only energy momentum tensor as low energy, low scaling dimension operator, then you can explicitly see that D plus one dimensional Einstein gravity arise as a holographic dual.
Is it really the case you have to get this sign? I mean, like, I don't know much about this, but there's like these Warshawa gravity and things of this sort. Is it possible for that to appear? So you get like a different.
No,
scaling?
I think Warshawa gravity doesn't have full D plus one dimensional diffeo.
Are you sure you have that though?
Here, yes. Yeah. So that's the statement. This H, this constraint form a first class constraint. That's the statement. And in general, Warshawa gravity, these are not first class constraints.
I wonder, do you have a limit where is ABS curvature are weak, but the gravitational fluctuations are strong? And in that case, I kind of wonder, you know, in this formulation, whether you have a long distance limit where despite strong quantum fluctuation, there's still some sense of Einstein gravity.
Right, so here, there's only one scale, which is the UV cutoff. So in general, the cosmological constant this order of UV cutoff, and Newton's constant coupling is also order of UV cutoff. You need to fine tune. Yeah.
To be very small.
Right.
You may have a very strong gravity, but a very large EBS.
That's right.
So, how do I see the finite temperature effect here?
So if there's a IR scale, then that means you have IR cutoff. If you have finite temperature, IR cutoff, and your RG has to stop somewhere. So that means you need to have an IR boundary. So, but how black hole precisely appear here, I don't know. But yeah.
The level of
some high order term in P, for example.
Yeah.
Right. But in the matrix model, they are not generated. So the action is quadratic in P. But for general theory, you may be right. You may have to include higher orders of higher parts of P.
In the interpretation in the bulk would be some higher interaction.
I get it.
coefficient could be changed in boundary conditions.
Yeah, for example, you know, if you try to run the same program for the vector Wen model, then vector Wen model single trace action is free. Therefore, you don't generate double trace operator for vector Wen. That's like the example where there's no pi square term. That's like the limit where gravitational coupling is zero. In a sense, in the sense, in this, that's the limit where there's no genuine quantum fluctuations of gravitational field.
I mean, usually, like, the higher trace terms in the Lagrangian should become just changes in boundary conditions in the bar, right?
So
it should be possible to have solved and completed somehow at the first step, in the relation between the first.
In the first step, if you had multi trace operator, you just integrate over boundary metric as well.
Another question.
Can you reverse this connection? So you say if the RG flow is gradient flow, then the bulk action should be invariant under Zeno's dependency.
Right.
Can you show, starting assuming a
Hollandian? I think the converse is more difficult.
Yes, yeah, I don't think that's been shown.
Yeah, I don't know how to show the converse. Yeah.
There are some limits, like holographs.
Yeah, so but. Yeah, I think if you allow this GMM to have anti-symmetric components, maybe you can incorporate the limit cycle.
Anybody else? Any other questions? Okay, well, one last question.
Can you have this also in the map of the state of the theory? Can you now map origin not south of the direction?
Some state.
Yeah, you can map your specific.
Yeah, then you have to cut your time slice and then open the boundary. Then you have to keep track of how boundary evolve. Yeah, in principle, it can be done. I think.
Okay, so
well,
I think something.